good?
The bad.
WTF. Thinking.
Welcome back to episode 76 of The Good, The Bad, and The WTF. What are they thinking? And after a little tiny mini extended break, we're back.
Summer break.
We had a little break. I mean, I feel like we needed one after you review every Jim Carrey movie. You deserve a week off. You really do.
You deserve therapy after a lot of their movies, let's be honest.
It's not wrong. You're not wrong at all about that. But we're back this week. We're finally back. And we are reviewing a movie that went straight to streaming. It's the prequel, Prey. So we should really talk about something that has happened to cinemas in the US, namely Cineworld. Go on, you lead the story.
Well, Cineworld have confirmed that they are going to file for bankruptcy, but this apparently only is the American chain. It says nothing about the cinemas in the UK, but you never know if it will snowball and it will affect other countries. But I think that's an interesting state of play is, have cinemas come back? Have they, because obviously with the coronavirus, all the cinemas were closed, and last year I wouldn't exactly say it came back to life. This year you had movies like Top Gun, you had the Jurassic Park movie. You had a few movies that did bring audiences back. Is the state of play with cinema still there? Is it an ongoing thing? Is it just going to get worse? I mean, considering our movie today is a Hulu original, which streamed, which I'm surprised actually this movie didn't go to cinemas because it's a franchise. It would have got bums in seats.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this movie obviously in more detail in a minute, but it is interesting because when I saw that Cineworld were going to file for bankruptcy, it was kind of a bit of clickbait because they never mentioned the US to begin with. So I was sort of thinking about, I mean, there's a lot of cinemas in the UK. I'd say they're the dominant powerhouse in the UK in terms of cinemas, Cineworld.
Yeah, I mean, you've still got an Odeon, you've got a Voo, you've got a Everyman Cinema. There's Curzon Cinema. I mean, that one is the big one. It's the big one where we live. Depends, I mean, if you go further southeast, there's a lot more Voo cinemas than Cineworld. So it does make you wonder, I mean, if America are having that problem, surely everyone's going to have that problem.
Yeah, it depends how popular that is in the US. Obviously, we don't live in the US. We don't know. I'm sure someone can tell us. But I would be interested to look at the stats on how this year so far has compared to 2019, for example. The last year before we went into the pandemic. Last full year we had before we went into the pandemic. I would be interested to see how the numbers have dipped up and down. And I would say when I've been to the cinema, the movies I've seen, there's always been quite packed in the cinemas that I've been to. I don't think that love has fully disappeared yet.
It's not disappeared, it's just, is there enough like passion to go? I mean, subscriptions, like there's so many streaming sites at the moment, you can watch so much stuff, and there's new content every week or at least every month, you know, and sometimes they don't get the publicity that, you know, like the movie that we're going to talk about, whether that's a marketing reason or not. There does always seem that movies don't get that big oomph. But for me, at cinemas, that is where I want to see a movie. Maybe I'm old school, but I like seeing the latest movie on the side of a bus. You know what I mean? You know, come see this movie, and it's got billboards up as you drive past, or on the side of buses, or bus shelters. I like, or in the subway. You know, I like that. For me, that is kind of old school, and I like stuff like that. And you don't get that with streaming. You know, it doesn't feel as like a grand opening, whereas a movie at the cinema feels like a grand opening, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does feel more of a moment when it's in the cinema. I think another issue is how quickly films go from cinema to streaming services now. There doesn't seem to be a lot of time. I mean, I remember like back in the day, you'd have a film in the cinema, it'd be in the cinema for weeks, sometimes months, depending on how popular it was. And then it would be a long time before you got it on DVD. And even longer before it was on TV, years until it was on TV sometimes, if you didn't have like Sky and you didn't have Sky Premier, etc. I feel like it's quicker now.
I think that's changing, though. This year feels like it's changing. Top Gun was in the cinema for a long time. 4 is still in cinemas. So I think probably because of the struggle of cinemas, they are keeping the movies that do well in there for a long time, which I actually like. Yeah. Like you said, it's some movies I think need to be there for a long time. I also think they need to bring back older movies, give them more of a showcase. Yep. In the cinema. You know, you want like a bring back the some of the Avenger movies, the MCU movies, put them in the cinema. Put The Dark Knight in the cinema, Inception, you know, these big Titanic, these big juggernauts.
Mm.
I think they need to be in there. I think you need to make it more a spectacle. I don't mean like 4DX, that's crap spectacle, but like a pure spectacle point of view. Star Wars, bring Star Wars back. That always does very well.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, any movie that is better with you know, a movie with great sound, or, you know, a movie with great visuals, big visuals, like you're talking like a Cameron movie or something like that, then yeah, or a Nolan movie, then bringing those back into cinema. And they seem to do it. They do it a lot. I think it's E.T.'s 40th anniversary this year, so mm-hmm. expect to see that hit the cinemas again, and that's probably quite a good movie to see in the cinemas. It's quite an occasion.
I mean, let's not forget, we've also got an Avatar movie. I know we're surprised yeah. that there's eventually an Avatar movie is being released.
I still don't believe it.
Let's see what that does, because the first one,
yeah.
that was a lot of people went to see that movie. Could it do the same thing again? I think it could. I think it could possibly get bums in seats.
I think the hype is still there for that movie. I really do. And I think that will build as soon as it's a month to go. And I think as soon as it hits the cinema, I think the marketing they're going to do around this movie is going to be ridiculous. I think it'll be an unavoidable thing. So I think it's going to do massive numbers. And I'll put my neck on the line now and say, I think it will be the highest grossing movie of the year.
I don't. I tell you, I tell you which one I think it's going to be. Top Gun.
I think Marvel movie.
I do think a Marvel movie, actually. I think Top Gun will be a close second. But I think the movie that's going to probably gross the most this year, I reckon, will be the Black Panther movie. I think that will gross the most.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Chadwick Boseman, rest in peace, has passed away. So I think there's a lot of intrigue to see what's going to happen with this with this story. It was a huge success when it did come out in 2018. I think that one's going to be the highest grossing movie yet. That's where I put my, if I could place a bet, I put it there.
Okay. Well, let's stick a pin in this moment and remember what we've said. I'm going Avatar. You're going Black Panther 2.
That's it.
And I think at the beginning of next year, we should do predictions for the year.
Well, that highest grossing movies?
At the end. Stuff like that. Highest grossing, breakout movie star, little things like that. We'll do a little predictions. That has to be right or wrong. There'll be something
movie
that
might win
fiction.
The Oscar.
Yeah, stuff like that. We always do our Oscar predictions, but yeah, we should do a prediction at the end of next year, so we'll do that if we remember. But
we'll do it at our end of the year review like we normally do.
Lord of the Rings is coming back in cinema as well, by the way, because I think it's to do maybe with the TV show that's hit, that maybe they're cashing in on that. But I've just seen here that the three movies are hitting the cinema in September again, so that should be interesting. That's another movie that's good to see in the cinema.
I saw him in the cinema. Long movies to see in the cinema. Then again,
long movies, but good.
Yeah, that does seem to be. If you're a franchise, you could do very well. If you're not a franchise, you're going to struggle a little bit in the cinema.
But before we quickly move on to our main event, did you see the trailer for Beast? Idris Elba Beast.
I've heard about Beast, but I've not seen this trailer.
I wish you had. When I went to see Nope, which we'll review next week.
Which I'm seeing today, so I might see the Beast trailer.
You probably will see the trailer before that. I saw it, and I tell you what, I was in a packed cinema when I saw Nope, and everyone sort of had the same sort of reaction. It was kind of like murmurs and laughs and giggles and like, what the fuck was that sort of thing. And I sort of listened to him and I was like, this is either going to be awful or pretty good. I'm leaning towards awful. There's something bad about it. It looks like a bad movie.
It looks like a sci-fi movie that you'd like a Sharknado kind of like sci-fi original kind of movie, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's weird. It's already out, actually. It came out on Friday. So I'll be interested to see how it fares critically. There's a few reviews. No, it seems to be mixed to average on the review scale. But I think it looked really bad. But I'll watch it before I make a real judgment.
And what's interesting is this movie actually kind of feels like a sibling of the movie we're reviewing today.
Yeah, exactly. Which we'll get into. Let's get straight into it then. Yeah. This week we reviewed the movie Prey, and it was Peter's selection. So, take it away. With Prey.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
It's a good line.
Love that line. So, this movie is the prequel to Predator. This one kind of just happened. It just felt like suddenly one day people said, oh, this is a movie called Prey, which is the prequel to Predator. It just felt like it came out of the blue, which I kind of like that. It's very rare. Normally we have like a long build-up, don't we? This movie we hear about for months and months and months and months, and then it comes out and you just feel like you've heard it so long that you've lost interest. But when you just have a movie that just blindsides you and just comes out and on the day and it's like, this is a Predator movie, you're like, wow, how did they do that? How did you pull the rabbit out of the hat and I not see how you did the trick? So this is the origin story of a set 300 years ago where Naru, a young teenager who is a skilled tracker, has to protect her tribe from one of the firstly highly evolved predators to land on Earth. There's a lot of difference between this predator. He looks very different from the predator that you'd know, so it kind of... It's kind of interesting that they've also shown you that not only 300 years ago how humanity was, but even 300 years ago, the predators were still, you know, they still didn't have all their technology. They were still learning who they were. So that's interesting. This isn't the first movie, by the way. The director, Dan Trachtenberg, this isn't the first movie that he's blindsided us with. And I wonder whether that is the marketing reason, because he was the director behind the... surprise hit of 2016, 10 Cloverfield Lane. And that movie had a fake name, and it suddenly just dropped, didn't it? They do that with the Cloverfield movies. They kind of like don't tell you everything that's happening. So that one was a big hit, and I wonder because of how well that did whether they thought to do the same with Prey.
Maybe. Yeah, because this is a movie I hadn't really heard too much about going into it.
Mm-hmm.
hadn't really. I don't know if maybe you have a different perception, but I didn't really see any hype about this movie.
From people who I knew a lot of people that had watched this movie and really liked it. I did see some reviews that are very favourable, so I had the expectation that I was going to watch a decent Predator movie, and the Predator franchise is an up and down franchise. I was considering when we did this one whether to do a ranked, like Predator ranked, but I thought we probably didn't have enough time to watch all the movies.
No.
Because it's an interesting franchise. The first one with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers and all of those people, Jesse Ventura, is such a iconic 80s, like, muscly guys in oil, tanned, fighting off this alien. It's a really weird movie when you think about it. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger is fighting an alien. It's a very weird concept, but it's such a great movie. Then you had Predator 2, which you had Danny Glover, and it was in New York. Was it New? It was in an urban setting. And then you had, for a long time, you had no Predator movie afterwards. And then you got Alien vs. Predator, Alien vs. Predator Requiem, Predators, which I think is a very good one, and then The Predator, which I haven't seen, which I've heard very bad things about. So it's a franchise that exists, but it's not Alien, is it? It's not that kind of level, this franchise, but no. It has an interest.
There's definitely a fan core there. There's a core of people that love Predator, that want to see it, probably want to see it have justice, you know, see it do justice.
Justice for Predator.
On the big screen. Because as you say, the 2018 one, I haven't seen it either, but looking at the reviews and the general consensus, it doesn't look like it was a good movie. And then it obviously went a bit silly when you do Alien versus Predator. Mm-hmm. Just those early 2000s, they were obsessed with those versus angle. It just, you know, Freddy versus Jason back in. They loved it, didn't they? And I wasn't a big fan even at the time of those sort of movies. I don't really like the cross. I think it kind of cheapens the franchise a little bit in my eyes. It feels like a proper cash-in concept.
There's proper fan service. That's like fanboy. That's like someone got a fanboy script and said, we're actually going to make this into a movie.
Yeah, which is interesting. But looking at this movie, Prey, compared to every other Predator movie, it has the best Rotten Tomatoes score. 93%.
Yeah.
It holds. So it holds the strongest. So out of all of the movies, if you compare this movie to the first one, which you probably shouldn't do, because, you know, they're different movies, this movie is a better movie.
But you can't, I mean...
Do you think it is, or does the nostalgia just creep in?
I think... You can't take the... I think Rotten Tomatoes is a bad system to look at to see how good a movie is, because unfortunately it more counters against good to bad reviews and not like a C. You know, if you're doing like F is bad or D is bad and A is great, a lot of Bs and Cs can get your score higher, can't they? So that's what I think is. It's not. I'd never look at. I always look at like critics that I like or people that I know who enjoy movies that recommend stuff. But I don't really go by like the general Rotten Tomatoes, because you look at that score and I don't really trust it. I'd look more at the audience score than the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah, I do like Rotten Tomatoes though, because I always think that it's a good barometer. For if everyone's reviews put together and you can see them, I think it's a good barometer for a good movie. Most of the time when I watch a movie with a high Rotten Tomatoes score, I'm normally like, yeah, that was a good movie.
But it wasn't a great movie.
Yeah, it doesn't always say which movies are great, which movies are, yeah, I know what you mean in that sense. I put it on the pedestal of I know a movie's going to be either good or bad with the Rotten Tomatoes score, not whether I know it's going to be the best movie of all time or the worst movie of all time. That's sort of how I look at it. But this has the better score, more reviews. It's interesting. as I was watching it, I was kind of thinking, this is a pretty good movie. I did enjoy it. I found it hard to get fully sucked into it. I think it got better as from the point of the grizzly bear scene. From then onwards, I really started to enjoy the movie a lot more.
One of my biggest problems is the grizzly bear scene.
You didn't like that?
I didn't like the CGI. I thought the CGI was very bad on the bear. Yeah. It looked terrible. And that threw me off.
The bear was...
Yeah. Once you see CGI... I don't know what's going on at the moment, and I don't know if you feel the same way as I do. I feel like CGI has been really bad recently. I'm thinking like movies... Yeah, I watched Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness the other week, and I thought the CGI in that was terrible. And that's like a big studio blockbuster. And I thought it was terrible. I thought it looked so fake, and it just really was bad. And this movie, again, you know, the bear was really bad.
Yeah, the bear was bad. The bear was bad. I thought it was a good scene. But yeah, if you compare that bear to the bear from The Revenant, which is a few years ago, you'd say the bear from The Revenant was a lot more realistic and a lot more powerful as a scene. But that was my clicking point of when the movie got better. Maybe when she was stuck in the mud as well. I thought that was a really good scene.
It's a slow movie. I think it's kind of trying to be like Cloverfield Lane, where it kind of wants you to kind of go, oh shit, there's a predator in this movie. It doesn't want you to think it's Predator. It wants to surprise you. It wants you to say, oh, what's this prey movie? And then turn this prey movie on, and then halfway through it, a predator pops up. You know, it kind of reminds me like From Dusk Till Dawn, where like the first half of it is like two criminals trying to escape to Mexico. And then you forget, like, I remember when I watched that movie on TV and it promoted itself as a vampire movie. And this was before the days of like the internet where you could cross check and examine everything. And I watched this movie and I remember halfway through it, I thought this was a vampire movie. And I forgot completely about it. And then suddenly you get to the, what was the strip club called? The Titty Twister or something like that?
Something like
that. Yeah. And then suddenly there's vampires and you go, oh yeah, this is a vampire movie. I completely forgot. I think it was trying to do that. I think it was trying to pull the rug from underneath you.
Yeah, it was. I think that's what makes a good prequel is that sort of slow build into the main sort of villain of the movie. Anyway, you don't want if the villain is there straight away, first scene, and then there for the whole movie, it's not really a prequel, is it? It doesn't have that prequel. There has to be a bit of history and build up, I guess. I think the casting of this movie was great. I really do. I really enjoyed the casting of this movie. I think this is a movie with the best names ever, the best run of names ever in a movie. Amber Midthunder, Dakota Beavers, Julian Black Antelope, Stormy Kip. These are the best names.
They are some good names.
In a cast of all time. I thought the casting was actually really, really good. I mean, there's been times where you have movies, and it's very Hollywood to do. They'll have a movie, and they'll cast... I think I'm trying to think of the exact movie it was. What's the movie? There was a lot of backlash about it. They basically just casted a bunch of white people to play a bunch of Egyptians, I think it was.
I don't know.
I can't remember what the movie was, but there was a lot of backlash, and I think this movie was actually really well cast. And it was kind of a bit more legitimate, wasn't it? You know.
Yeah, it was a smaller cast as well, which is what I like. This one felt very stripped down. Normally, when you go, how many movies did I say? Is this the seventh Predator movie? Normally, when you get to seven, everything is amplified. Everything is more heightened. You know, this one is so stripped down. This is a what I'd call a classic B movie. This is a cat and mouse game. This is all this is. This is a Predator versus this one woman, and it is just the which one is going to outsmart them. I love the visuals of this movie. There's some great visuals when the French revolutionaries kidnap them, and they tie them to that post, That is just some great cinematography right there.
It is.
It's also perhaps one of the most brutal Predator movies. I mean, it's quite graphic. It's quite gory.
It's pretty gory. It is pretty gory. You don't see a lot of the Predator either. It's basically invisible for the majority of the movie.
A lot like the first movie.
Yeah, yeah. And that kind of builds that suspense a lot more. I was watching this movie, and I know we go back to what we said at the start of the podcast. I thought this movie would be great for the cinema. As I was watching, I thought the sound was brilliant. The sound in this movie is great.
This is a popcorn movie. This is something that you could easily watch on like a Saturday night.
And I think I would have enjoyed this movie more in the cinema as well. I think I would have come away from this movie first viewing and enjoyed it way more in the cinema than watching it at home. But I still enjoyed it. I still enjoyed it. But I just, yeah, it just felt like a really good cinema movie. And I feel like a lot of people might miss this movie. You know? I say casual moviegoers who would love this movie might miss this movie because it's come straight to streaming.
I think it depends. I don't know how Hulu's set up, but obviously we saw it on Disney Plus, and you can see it's been advertised to the movie. You can easily see that movie. If this was a Netflix movie, it'd get lost in the shuffle because I don't think Netflix do very well
100%
at promoting their stuff. Like The Gray Man, for example. I know it's on Netflix. I've never seen anything to say it's on Netflix. You know what I mean? And that's meant to be, you know, that's Chris Evans, that's Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling. That's a big cast. There's a lot of money gone into that, and I haven't seen one bit of advertisement for that.
It's a very typical Netflix movie. They seem to love the action thrillers, don't they? They seem to really go for the action thrillers. I don't know. I think that would take me a while to watch that movie.
I've heard bad stuff about it, so I'm not.
Yeah.
It didn't interest me anyway. It's the same with that Bullet Train. You know, I looked at it and thought, I'm not really sure about it. The reviews have been, so that's also, like, thrown me off as well.
Yeah, I was kind of, with Bullet Train, as soon as I saw Brad Pitt on the red carpet promoting this movie, I thought this guy's having too much fun. He clearly did this movie for the paycheck.
Yeah.
And maybe that will put me off a little bit, but it might be a good movie. It might be a good movie. It's got again a very, very decent cast, so who's to say?
That's what money does.
Michael Shannon's in it. That's almost enough to get you to go watch the movie in itself.
I did not know Michael Shannon was in that movie. Now I'm disappointed because he is. I like watching a Michael Shannon movie where I don't know that Michael Shannon's in the movie, like The Night Before, where you're just like, oh, Michael Shannon's here. You know, that's my kind of movie. I think every movie, honestly, if Michael Shannon was in this movie, it would give it a higher rating. Prey just, it was just a Michael Shannon away from being a great movie.
To be fair, if you see what he looks like in this movie, you may not know he's in this movie as well.
He
has long grey hair.
Not even gonna look.
And he was wearing sunglasses.
Are you sure that's not Brad Pitt? Because that sounds like Brad Pitt.
It does. But it's Michael Shannon. The one, the only Michael Shannon. Yeah, he's in that movie. I need to see another Michael Shannon movie. Another new movie. He's in a few coming up. The Flash. Amsterdam. David O. Russell movie. That sounds good. That's probably going to be quite good.
I'd like to see David O. Russell's The Flash movie. That would be a movie to see. So let's talk about this movie again. So Dan Trachtenberg, not done a lot of movies. This is his second. I heard someone say, someone I follow a podcast, has said that he thinks Dan Trachtenberg's just one movie away from a great movie. Like, he just needs that one great script and then he's off and running. I kind of feel that way with him. I feel like he's I watched two Dan Trachtenberg things this week. So I watched this and I watched the pilot for The Boys, because everyone's been telling me to watch The Boys, so I want to watch The Boys. And that was a great pilot. And you can just see this guy's a great director. He's just got a great eye for storytelling. And And also for casting, like I said, these people are unknowns, and it's easy to have unknowns in your movie and fuck it up, because the thing with unknowns are they might not be the best actors. It took me a while in this movie. The one thing that I kind of wish they... My one grievance with this movie is I wish that they didn't speak with American accents in English. I kind of wish that they would speak in their native tongue, because there's not a lot of dialogue in this movie anyway. It's very action heavy and there's not a lot of dialogue that they could have easily gotten away with it. That threw me off. Because there's moments where they do talk in their native tongue and then there's moments where they don't. And I don't like that. It's one or the other with me. You can't be in both sandboxes. You have to pick one.
I agree. I think it would, I agree. Native tongue would have been way better. I mean, who is this movie made for? You do wonder with those sort of moments when they go full American. You think, for God's sake. Because some Americans are so lazy. They don't want to watch a foreign movie. Or they don't want to feel like they're watching a foreign movie. Do you know what I mean? Have a bit of English in there, and then it won't be advertised as a foreign cinema movie. But I agree with what you're saying about Dan, but it's early days. It's only his first two movies. They're both pretty good movies to kick off with.
But that's like a good 6 years ago he did 10 Cloverfield.
Yeah, he doesn't have the PR that a lot of other up-and-coming directors have. So maybe that's working against him. I would say that his name is not a name that you would know. Obviously, we're into cinema, so we do know. But I mean, like, yeah, every day, if someone goes, do you know Dan Trachtenberger? So they'd be like, no.
Yeah, but who...
But if you go, have you seen this movie, that movie? They'd be like, oh, yeah.
Do people know who David O. Russell is? You know, I don't...
You fucking hope so, would you?
I don't. Surely. I mean, you're talking about the general consensus. I think the general consensus of people probably know who Christopher Nolan is, Tarantino, Scorsese, Spielberg, and then everyone else is kind of like, no, they probably don't know. It depends if they how well they know the person, you know, how well they know the product. Like, people who know Jordan Peele will know a Jordan Peele movie, but people who don't know Jordan Peele won't.
Jordan Peele's got the PR. He's got good PR around him for his name. His name will be put on. If he produces a movie, his name, from the people that brought you Get Out and Us. You know what I mean? He'll be on that, even if he just said, yeah, that's cool, that movie, yeah, that's cool. I'll put some money behind it. His name will be used, but Dan's won't be used. but maybe one day. We'll have to see on his third movie. It'd be nice for him to do a movie in quick succession. Don't want to wait another 6 years for his next movie. But who knows?
What other franchise will he go to next? I'm surprised that Marvel hasn't gone through.
Yeah, I don't want him to. Stop Marvel. Somebody stop Marvel from taking all these directors and tying them down to these crap movies. These typical movies that could have got anyone to direct. Sick of Marvel.
I can't wait until
Marvel
was
overrated.
MCU ranking. That will...
We're not doing an MCU ranking.
One day we'll have to do one. I'll
do one when it dies to celebrate.
It's never going to die. It's like a weed. It just keep growing back.
But do you see when they release their, like, I mean, it's like, it's embarrassing, I actually think now. It's kind of like with Apple. When Apple comes and they do a big conference, they're like, these are the products we're producing. And it's like mind-blowing stuff. It was good back in the day when it was like, oh, wow, the iPod. You know, when they were doing new stuff, then you were like, this is crazy.
When they just go,
we have a new
PR, though. They do Star Wars.
Yeah, Apple go, we have a new feature that you've been wanting on your phone for the last 5 years and we finally give it to you and we're going to celebrate that. They're starting to do that with these movies. They come out and they go, these are the movies we're doing in 2023, and it's like 15 movies and it looks like the text is like a poster for a festival, you know, like download festival is what it looks like. And I'm sick of it. All right? I'm absolutely sick of it. I would respect them much more if they just dropped a movie randomly. And they were like, we're doing this movie. We're doing this. Not like, here's everything you got to look forward to. And you're like, fucking Four. They're doing another Four movie. Does anyone like Four?
I like Four.
Have you met someone that likes Four?
I like Four.
What?
I haven't seen the new
four
one.
Four's
got to
be the worst one, isn't it? They're all crap. I know this is unpopular opinion. I know people love this shit. I can't stand it. I cannot stand it. I'm sorry.
I can't wait until we do that episode. Right?
I'm sorry. I'm not watching the movies. I just can't. I can't.
Not only have you got to watch the movies, you've got to watch the TV shows.
Yeah, and I've got to do it from the beginning because I don't watch these movies. I just don't enjoy them. Guardians of the Galaxy was okay, but it's a bit like Deadpool, you know? It's trying too hard to be funny, and Chris Pratt is now like the James Corden of cinema, you know? He's a bit annoying now, isn't he? Like, he started off all right. He was funny when he was a little bit chubby and in like low budget stuff, and then the more money they gave him, the slimmer he got, the worse he got.
I'm trying to figure that's how you like MCU the worst or Chris Pratt. And if Chris Pratt was not in the MCU,
I don't hate
like,
Chris Pratt.
You just don't want to see him alive anymore, is what you said.
I don't hate Chris Pratt. I hate the persona of Chris Pratt on screen. I'm sure maybe off screen he's okay, but when I see him on screen, I'm like, this guy's so unlikable. He's got the James Corden about him, where he's like, he's playing the likable guy, but somehow being unlikable at the same time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Everyone roots for the bad guy. He's your John Cena, isn't he? He's your John Cena of the WWE.
Yeah, but John Cena's gone full circle. John Cena started off as that guy, and he's become likable because he's been in a few movies and taken the piss out of himself.
So he's your Roman Reigns?
I think John Cena was actually a bit misunderstood. I think he came in as this guy and he's evolved into someone better, whereas I think there's been a de-evolution for Chris Pratt and James Corden. I feel like they're the same guy.
I never see him in the same room the American together. And I never James watched the James Corden late night show either, so I cannot vouch that they have been in the same room together. But I will say that they're not in Prey.
They have. They're not in Prey. We're not talking too much about Prey now.
We've gone completely somewhere else.
I do apologize. I do have other movies to talk about that I watched this week, actually, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah. We'll talk about Prey.
Or will we? Let's talk about Prey. And then we'll talk about Beavis and Butthead, because I saw that yesterday. So we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes.
Where can you watch that one?
Have you not seen it?
Not the new movie. I want to see it. You know I want to see it.
Oh, I thought you'd seen it. Sorry, it's on Paramount Plus.
Where can you
watch it?
Where can you get Paramount Plus?
Like, it's on Sky. They have it. It's an app.
Okay.
You can get the free trial, watch it, and then spin it off. You know, that's all we do.
Just for that movie alone.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Well, we'll talk about that next week, maybe when you see it.
Future of this. Let's talk about the ending. I mean, I really liked how they ended this movie with the paintings describing what happened, and then the final bit where you say that the more Predator ships came, the hell would you call it? Spaceship comes, yeah. Ship, yeah, same thing, ship. I like that. I like that more that they did it that way than actually shoo you. It's probably because they ran out of budget. Maybe that's why it was clever, though. I liked how it ended. And my question is, what's the future for Predator? Where do we think it's going to go? Do we think there's going to be more? There's talk that there could be another Prey sequel. Or do we? What do we want from Predator? What is our aim?
I kind of feel like there won't be another Prey sequel. I feel like they're actually going to just redo Predator again. But now they've set the foundations nicely for the movie to be made again. The 2018 one, but like a proper one.
I have a question for you.
To be made again.
I have a question for you. Why have we never seen Arnold Schwarzenegger back in a Predator movie? Because if it's a Terminator movie, he's always in there. Never makes any sense how he's in these movies. But they always... Even though Predator is a robot that never ages, it always feels that when Arnold Schwarzenegger's in the movie, he looks old. And you're thinking, hang on, he's a Terminator. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would they make an old Terminator?
I would say because he is Terminator. And that is the main draw of the movie. Predator, well, he's not the main draw of the movie, is he? The main draw of the movie is the Predator.
If he was in the next one, considering you've not seen him since 1987 in The Predator, how great would it be if suddenly he has to fight a predator again? Why has that movie not been made? I don't understand. Predator versus Dutch. Why haven't we got Predator versus Dutch?
I don't really know.
That would be.
I don't really know.
That would be so great. You know, I would.
That would be great. That would be great. I mean, this was Arnie at his best as well in the Predator. It's Arnie at his best. Hmm. I don't know. I just don't know if he's the main draw of the movie. Maybe that's why.
But that would be a massive draw to have him come back into a Predator movie. He doesn't have to be the main guy, but he...
Think he's a bit too old now?
They still get him out for the Terminator movie, though, don't they?
Yeah, he doesn't do a lot when he's... He's 75. He doesn't do a lot. He's older than you think, isn't he? 75.
He's been going around since the 60s.
He's pretty good for 75, doesn't he? Yeah. Oh, do you know who his son-in-law is? Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt. It was full circle.
Fuck's sake. Just when I thought we'd ended it, he's back. What, I forgot that he was going
what about
with Catherine.
Arnie and Chris fighting the Predator?
Son-in-law
and father-in-law fighting
he's
the Predator.
He's anywhere near it.
With Predator, father and son. Why don't we ever see like the Predator world? Like, can't we go to Predator world and like see little Predators and like female Predators, male Predators, you know, Predator schools, politics?
I don't know. I don't know. But can I just back on Chris Pratt for one second?
You gotta leave
second.
Chris Pratt alone.
Just for one second, right? I'm just gonna just the movie, the three upcoming movies that he has coming out, right? He plays Mario in Mario.
And without an Italian accent, by the way, I've heard.
And without an Italian accent. And he does Garfield in Garfield. He's ruining two things in the next 2 years. All right, just
he ruined
aware.
Jurassic Park.
He ruined Jurassic Park.
He nearly ruined Indiana ruin these... Jones because they wanted to cast him as the new Indiana Jones.
Look, I got nothing against Chris Pratt except everything that he ever stands for is what I've got against Chris Pratt. I preferred... Do you know what? Team Anna Faris is all I'm saying.
I'm guessing you've not seen his new TV show on Amazon.
That's a silly question. Of course I haven't. What is it?
The Terminal List or something? You did not see The Tomorrow War, all right? I had to watch The Tomorrow War, and that's on Amazon. That is a terrible movie. That's a movie...
We need to bring back...
That is a movie that you would not believe how much money they spent on that fucking thing. Like, who thought that was a good idea?
What was it? What's it called, sir?
The Tomorrow War.
The Tomorrow War?
Yeah.
The Tomorrow War.
It's a bad movie.
It looks bad.
It's very bad.
J.K. Simmons in it as well. J.K. Simmons, the most like... No, not J.K. Simmons, the most likable guy. I think it is. Do you know, I always get J.K. Simmons and Stanley Tucci mixed up based on their names. both very likable people. The bald kings, is what we're called. Yeah, this movie looks bad. Chris McKay, let yourself down, man. Let yourself down. Stop working with Chris Pratt, for fuck's sake. Yeah, anyway, we'll get off Chris Pratt because I think people are getting slightly annoyed. Who like Chris Pratt are probably like, man, leave him alone, man.
You remind me of that sketch I show you this week with the guy that... does like he did a sketch on Sunday Supplement with like he played Roy Keane, Jerry Carragher, Gary Neville, and Graham Souness.
Yeah.
You remind me today of Graham Souness. You keep bringing Pogba up. It's like I hate Chris Pratt. It's like he's not even in this movie, and we're talking about Chris Pratt. I hate Chris Pratt. I hate him.
He is, but there's a link. All right, we've linked it. Pray. Predator, Arnie, Pratt. Done.
Yeah, but what about before then?
By nature.
What about before then?
I don't know. I don't know how he actually came up before then. I compared it to... Yeah, that's because I was annoyed at Marvel. That's how we got into it. Went from Marvel to Chris Pratt.
Back to Chris Pratt again.
Back to Chris Pratt again.
So where are we putting this movie then?
It's obviously a good movie. Okay. I think I always think there's not much to say about it because it is a movie you really do have to watch. Because the journey
most movies
is
have
good.
To watch, yeah.
Yeah, but like this, there isn't too much to really talk about with this movie in terms of like it's a very good visual movie. Yeah,
it's a good cat and mouse movie. It's not.
Yeah.
You don't have to heavily think about this movie. It's a nice little movie to watch. It's fun. You can easily. I think it's probably very repeatable. I could imagine watching this movie again. It's the kind of movie that.
Yeah.
Like for its runtime, you stick it on, you like flick it around. What do I feel like watching? And you think I wouldn't mind watching this. I think. Where is it going to fit into the rankings of Predator for me? It's probably midway. I think it's probably like third or fourth best Predator movie.
Third or fourth? I'd probably put it second. First movie, this one, then maybe Predator 2.
I think, second one for me would be Predator 2, and then it might be a toss-up between Predators and this. I like Predators. Predators is cool.
Okay. He likes Predators. Okay. There you go. Seemed good. And don't forget, a WTF Slammer will be coming back soon because I've got some things to say.
About Chris Pratt. You can only put him in once,
Chris
by
Pratt's
the way.
Special. Did I put him in before?
I don't know. I'd have to look back at previous. Oh, you put the MCU in there. No, you didn't get it in there in the end, did you?
No, you wouldn't let me. But yeah, I'll get there eventually.
Yeah, we've got Chris Pratt.
He'll come around to it. Let's move on to our top five then. Top five, selection.
Yes. So, like I said, I was originally thinking about doing a Predator ranking list, but I thought it's probably... big stretch to fill it in a week for you because I think you've probably not seen as many Predator movies as I have. I'm very, very full on the Predator movies.
Yeah, I think you're a Predator freak, aren't you?
So I am a Predator freak. So I thought, well, why don't we talk about prequels? Because I thought there's not a lot of... prequels is a weird thing because there's not a lot of them when you look at it, actually. I thought there was more prequels than there are, but they're very limited supply.
They are, and I don't think there's that many good ones.
Now they call them reboots as well, and there's not many good ones either.
Yeah.
I
would be surprised if we didn't get at least 4 out of 5 same selections here.
We'll see what we thought. We leave it loose, what we consider a prequel to be, so I'm going to kick off with number 5. Number 5 is Red Dragon.
Okay, not in my list.
Not in your list. This was the prequel to The Silence of the Lambs. It's actually the first book in the Thomas Harris series. And so actually, it's a prequel in the Anthony Hopkins movies, but Red Dragon was the first book he did before Silence of the Lambs. And actually, Red Dragon was the first movie before Silence of the Lambs, which was called Manhunter, which starred Brian Cox as Hannibal Lecter. So there we go. There's a little bit of a... filler for you. That's why they never made it. They went straight into the Silence of the Lambs. This one I really like. It's I think the sequel Hannibal felt like the problem was too much Lecter, and I think Lecter is better when he's in a smaller role. I think what makes Lecter interesting is the fact that you don't know how dangerous Hannibal Lecter is. And this one, the villain, the Red Dragon, is played by Ralph Fiennes, who really goes to town on this one. And it's a real creepy character. Very scary. Probably even more scarier than Buffalo Bill. Edward Norton's in this movie. He's the main star. You also have Philip Seymour Hoffman. Before he was like a big character. It feels more of a sequel to Silence of the Lambs than Hannibal does. It feels a lot more of that same sort of movie. And that's why I like it. I don't know where people rank this movie. I have not heard anyone talk about Red Dragon in a long time. But I've always liked it. I've always thought it's one of my favorite movies. At least one of my favorite top 5 prequels.
Do you like the prequel to the prequel? Hannibal Rising?
I've never seen Hannibal Rising. Again, like I said, too much Lecter, man. I'm not sure about too much Lecter. I've never seen the TV show Hannibal either.
Nor have I. I mean, this is like, this is all about Hannibal, isn't it? It's kind of young Hannibal. How much further back can you go? They're going to probably do a prequel to this where it's just, you know, the mum and dad. You know.
Who were the real cannibals?
Who were the real cannibals, yeah. Interesting. I always think a movie like Hannibal is weird that there's a franchise around Hannibal. Just because it always feels like a one-off.
That was such a huge movie, though. You got to remember, those movies were huge. And of course, it's based on books. You had three books. I don't know if Hannibal Rising's a book, but obviously Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, and Red Dragon
were
books.
It is a book.
Oh, Hannibal Rising is.
It was a book in 2006, and they made the movie in 2007. So they may have just...
They say, you better hurry up with that book, man. We're gonna make that movie before you make that book.
Yeah, you better send us that last page, right? Yep. We're making this bugging movie.
Annie Hopkins ain't getting younger.
It's weird that they milked so much out of this. There's a lot, isn't there? There's actually a lot. Clarice as well. They did in 2021.
I didn't know that.
American drama TV series. Yeah, so there's no end to this, all right? This is not going away anytime soon.
Hey, really, really. This is one of the most unusual franchises.
Yeah, it is. It feels like it shouldn't be a thing, but it is. My number five is Rogue One. Is this in your list?
No, but I thought you were going to have this one.
I love this movie. I was debating having this movie higher. I think the ending of this movie was the perfect introduction to Lord himself. And I thought one of the best scenes that Star Wars has produced on screen.
I'd agree with you
in a very, very long time. That is a brilliant, brilliant scene. I thought the pacing of this, I thought there was a lot of... it felt needed. It felt like there was actually a lot of needed story to be told in this movie. Whereas when I compare it to like some of the TV series, it does feel like it's like you're kind of just squeezing stuff out of nowhere here. You're just like making up new planets and new things just for the fuck of it now because you can. But this one kind of felt like it was actually a really good story that kind of needed to be told. And it was in between the first and the second, I believe, of the new movies. And it was better than both.
Yeah,
it was easily the standout. We saw it in cinema, didn't we? We saw this in a cinema where they served burgers during the screening. You could eat a burger in your seat.
Maybe that's why I didn't like that movie that much. Because of the...
It reminds you of smell of burgers.
Of that cinema. I don't have a problem with this movie. I think my problem with this movie is that I didn't really like any of the characters.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought like they
Felicity
were...
Jones, I thought was great in this movie.
She was all right. There just was like no. I wanted like more oomph from the characters. But yeah, this feels like the most standalone movie that probably Star Wars has and will ever make.
Yeah, easily. Easily.
I say that, but Andor, they haven't. I fucked up. Because they're going to have a TV show on Andor, aren't they? And Andor was in Rogue One.
Ah. I didn't know that they were making a TV series about that. See, they're making so many TV series, I don't even know what fucking's coming anymore. Okay, Andor.
I want the Jabba the Hutt TV series. That's
Which
the one
I
want.
Which is a prequel.
There's a prequel Jabba the Hutt, to a prequel.
Yeah, Andor is a prequel to Rogue One, 5 years before the events of Rogue One. Anyway, the kings of prequels, Star Wars, had to make the list somewhere. And I think, I say kings, so it just means they do it a lot. Doesn't really mean they do it great. But this was one of their better ones.
Fair enough. My number four is an interesting prequel because the original movie was terrible. But then they got Mike Flanagan to do the sequel. And my God, that is a great movie. That it's a shame that it's a prequel to such a bad movie. I'm talking about Ouija, Origin of Evil. Now, Ouija came out in 2014. Terrible movie. Really hate it. Really got nothing good to say about that movie. Ouija, Origin of Evil, is one of the scariest, brilliant... It basically tells me that if you give Mike Flanagan anything, he can make something out of it. And he did. When I saw he was attached to this, I thought, why is he getting attached to this for? That was a terrible movie. Why is he getting into the sequel? And then I watched it and I realised, he's actually salvaged this franchise. It's scary. It's everything that you'd expect the Mike Flanagan movie to be. And that's why I like it. I do think it's a really surprising horror prequel. And that's why I picked it.
I don't think I've seen that movie.
Just don't watch the first one. Skip Ouija and go straight to Ouija Origin of Evil.
Ouija Origin of Evil. I think that's probably why I haven't seen it, because of the title. That title puts me off.
It's a bad title, but it's a good movie.
Yeah, it just seems like a typical, like, straight-to-DVD type movie. Anyway, my number four is... and again, I think this is maybe the third or fourth podcast, potentially in a row, where we spoke about this movie, Prometheus.
This is my number two.
There we go. All right, we can talk about it together. We spoke about this movie a lot. I don't know what we can add to this.
Stop the hate. It's better than what you think.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good enough statement to leave it on, actually. This is just obviously a brilliant movie, and I think it's aged really well. I think it gets better every time you watch it. It's actually one of those movies.
Yeah, it's the only thing I'm disappointed with is that its sequel, Alien Covenant, just was nothing like Prometheus. Because of all the backlash Prometheus had with the fact that you didn't see much alien, that in Alien Covenant, they just had to give you an alien to see throughout the whole thing. It kind of ruined for me what made Prometheus so good, is that it felt like they'd really expanded this universe so far that actually I didn't even need the alien. I think that's, for me, maybe I'm in the rare exception, I didn't need to have a xenomorph to enjoy this movie, because I thought there was enough in it that it didn't need a xenomorph.
Yeah, it probably didn't. It really probably didn't. But that's what makes it great. I mean, we've spoken about this movie a lot. I feel like we're just repeating ourselves. But yeah, that's my number four, Prometheus. Brilliant movie. It's hard to make a good prequel of a great movie.
Leads me to number three. A prequel to a great movie. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Not in my list.
Oh, right. It's a lot more...
That's wrong. It's a lot more diverse.
This movie is the movie that brought out the PG-13 rating. This one in Gremlins, because they were so dark that they thought they were deemed too dark for a PG, but not dark enough for an R rating, so they found a middle ground. This movie is... it's probably the third best of the Indiana Jones, I think. Raiders and Crusade are the better movies, but this one is fun for a lot of reasons. It's very gory, it's very dark. I think I like it for that. I mean, I still remember the scene where they ate the monkey brains.
Great scene.
It is a great scene. Or the roller coaster, but when they're in the cave mining, in the little mining crate thing, going through the thingy. It's just a typical blockbuster that you would expect from Steven Spielberg. It's easy to fuck up a franchise like Indiana Jones, because we've seen so many other franchises that had that problem. And to go from Raiders, which is such a great classic movie, to go to Temple of Doom and still get it right. It's not obviously as great as Raiders, but it's still such an entertaining movie, and that's why it's third for me. I just love to revisit that movie. That is a... Put that in the cinema, man. I want to see Temple of Doom in Cineworld. That will save you.
They'll probably bring it back one day when when there's a new one or an anniversary or something.
There's another one coming in. Harrison Ford's like 85 or something, but they're still putting them in there.
I will still indie do movie. It, yeah. He'll still do it. Yeah, there's no love lost for that movie. Number three for me is Casino Royale. Ooh. Would you count that as a prequel?
A little bit, I'm surprised you've got so far down, because that's my number one.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, I didn't really put these in order. I just kind of did these quite randomly. But yeah, what's your number? Is this my number three? And that was your number three?
Yeah. And my number two and one have already been picked, so two and one are all yours.
Okay, well, I'm fucking shocked you haven't picked my second one. Anyway, we'll talk about Casino Royale. For me, favourite Bond, Daniel Craig, and my favourite Bond movie, Casino Royale. I think it's as simple as that. This movie is fantastico. Takes you on it's very well paced, again, for a Bond movie. It's got a lot more style. It's cooler. I think this is the perfect introduction. I think probably the best debut Bond movie. Best debut movie for a new Bond.
It's ever. Very edgy, isn't it? When you as think well. About...
Yeah.
Because it took it to a new place. This feels like the most aggressive Bond movie. And especially like that beginning scene where the beginning action scene. It's so aggressive, and it kind of shows the origins of how this character came to be.
Mm. It took it to a whole new place. It took it to a whole new place, and you were like, shit, we're watching, this is Bond. This is new Bond. So it's a great movie, and I do think, I mean, there's rumours of Tom Holland being the next James Bond. He's the favourite. He's the bookie's favourite. I know. It's exactly what I'm thinking. I think Bond's going to go in a whole different direction. I can't imagine that gritty Bond being Tom Holland. He may have it in him, but I have my reservations.
He's too young and smooth to... I don't know who I want to be in my new Bond. Like I've always said, I want it to be someone who isn't already a movie star. Because I feel that Bond needs to make you a movie star, not a movie star has to play Bond. That is how I look at it, in my opinion. Look at all the actors that have ever played Bond before... And then think of the biggest movie they were in before they were in Bond. And you can't do it. You can't, because they didn't have that movie. So for me, Bond has got to be an up-and-comer. Someone who's just like, for example, like a Will Poulter. That is the kind of idea of a Bond for me. Someone who's not that big yet, who's known, but he needs that thing that could make him a movie star.
Yeah. I struggle with the new Bond, if I'm being honest. I can't think.
I struggle with names.
Who could be the new Bond?
I mean, Tom Hardy, again, nah, I don't see that one. Idris Elba. There was a point where I would have said, yeah, but I think he's too old to play that character now.
Yeah, I do as well.
Henry Cavill, again, just feels uninspiring. He's not my kind of Bond. I don't know.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. Tough shoes to fill. Gotta go straight to my number two. I can't believe this isn't in your list at all. The Godfather Part Two.
I thought it was cheating a bit. That's why I didn't put it in there.
Why would you mean?
Because it's kind of a sequel stroke, a prequel, isn't it, really? It's got flashback scenes, but everything else about it is a sequel.
But it's kind of like, I know what you mean. But to me, it's still a prequel. No? Am I cheating with this one?
Hey, you can put it in there. You have to fight for it. I had to fight
for my opinion. I can say whatever I want. It's going in there. It's a great movie.
I think it has a flashback scene, but then for me, it'd be like, well, does that mean that any movie... Any sequel that has a flashback scene automatically make it a prequel. For me, I just thought it was too grey for me to put it in.
Okay. Well, it's gone in mine because I firmly believe that it is, in fact, a prequel. And it's obviously a classic movie. So it bloody deserves it. And then I'll go to my number one because we'll be talking forever. And it's our namesake, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. Again, this is a prequel. It's considered a prequel. Again, not officially a prequel. Because the reason why it's considered a prequel is it depicts Clint Eastwood's character gradually acquiring clothing that he wore throughout the first two films. And also takes place during the Civil War, 1861 to 1865. So therefore, it's a prequel.
Again, the reason I didn't pick this one is because I've always thought all three of those movies are standalone movies. Like, they're only really sequels because of Clint Eastwood. Because Leave Land Cleef plays a character in For a Few Dollars More, and he plays a character in this. Now, his character in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly dies. So if it's a prequel to A Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More, then who the hell is he in For a Few Dollars More? This is where it gets confusing for me.
It does get confusing.
And that's why I thought, I can't erase my brain on what I think it is, so I'm going to naturally call it a sequel or standalone movie.
It's technically, I think I've got you on a technicality. I think I've got you on a technicality.
I looked at the best prequels ever made, and Godfather and Good, the Bad, and the Ugly were up there. I just personally couldn't vouch for them because I kind of know things. But there's nothing wrong, you know, you can legitimize your list as much as you want.
I will sleep at night fine with this decision. That is my top five anyway. There you go. Top five prequels.
Top five. There we go.
Surprise, move on to next week's. There, no. Again, that's a mess as well, isn't it? He's dead. He's alive. He's hench. He's skinny. He's slender. He's small. He's tall. He's fat. He's thin.
And he's...
Fucking hell, this guy. Is it the same guy?
And he's not even in one of them.
One of them is not in. One of them is just like a different movie about fucking selling toys.
Do you know, I saw a YouTube video the other day of Michael Myers, while we're keeping in the discussion, the like worst CGI in a movie. Do you know, in Halloween H2O, he had a CGI mask in it because they couldn't find his mask or something. So for half of the movie, he's wearing a CGI mask. And I never knew that.
Because they lost the
mask.
And
then when you like really focus in on it, you really see that it's just like hovering over his face.
I need to look at that. Michael Myers, CGI mask. Yeah, you can tell. Shit, that looks horrible, actually.
It's terrible.
How did they lose the mask?
I don't know what
happened. God, it looks really bad.
I don't know if it was... Sorry, I don't know if they lost the mask. They weren't sure what mask they were going to use.
So they just CGI'd it.
Yeah, so in those bits, he's not even wearing a mask.
Someone has done a ranking of all of his best to worst masks.
Best one's going to be the first one, surely.
It is. And it is the first one.
Worst one. Halloween 4?
I mean, if Halloween Resurrection, if you look at the mask now, you'll be like, okay, yeah.
It was a terrible movie as well, so it's a terrible movie, and terrible mask.
Halloween H2O 20 years later. Which again is a fucking awful name as well.
It is. It sounds like water.
There's a lot. To be fair, there's a lot of bad masks. I think the Rob Zombie ones are trying too hard to be, like.
The problem with Rob Zombie is he's too ripped in that movie. Is that how the hell did he get ripped?
Yeah, and then he goes straight back to being normal again on the next ones. He didn't like it either. Anyway, next week's movie. Well, we teased it throughout this movie anyway, but because you're going to see it later on today, It's Nope.
Nope.
Jordan Peele's Nope with Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer. This movie is about two siblings running a horse ranch in California discover something wonderful and sinister in the skies while the owner of an adjacent theme park tries to profit from the mysterious otherworldly phenomenon. I've seen this movie. You're about to see this movie. I'm intrigued about your thoughts on this movie because I have been wanting to talk about this movie since I watched it. So go fucking watch it.
Sitting on your hands, said, I need to talk to someone about this movie.
Yep, indeed I have. There's a lot to say about this movie. I think, yeah, I'm not going to say any more than that. We'll review it in next week's episode.
I'm happy. Like I said, I'll watch it. I got the week off. Well, I'll watch it today. And then...
let it simmer. You have a whole week for it to simmer.
We'll find out what I think.
There we go. We'll keep it under wraps. All right. See you later. Goodbye. Adios. Farewell.
And to any Chris Pratts listening, we love you, really.
Go fuck yourself.